All right, the Ira Kaufman podcast is on, and the man of the hour, he is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, the custodian of Canton himself, 49 years covering the NFL, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. It's the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years. Ira, how are you, man?
I'm a little fatigued, gentlemen. Long day yesterday. We decided to take the plunge, and we drove to my brother-in-law's, Palm Coast, 3 hours and 15 minutes each way, up and back, same day, brought Cosmo. He's got his own dog, and there was some more people there, and they had a dog. And so, you know, the driving was a grind, and don't ask me for any details, because I'm not going to give it to you. But I believe I was in the bathroom at one point, and I heard a scream from, and it was Cosmo's scream, and I believe Cosmo was violated by one of the other dogs. He was violated. We cannot go into detail. My wife saw the whole thing. She tried to tell me on the way home in detail, and I didn't want to hear it. I was squeamish. I shifted uneasily in my seat as she was describing what the hell happened with this other dog going behind them. Gentlemen, I am certainly glad that I did not witness such an atrocity.
Well, Ira, good golly, that was...
See, that's what you get when you say, how you doing, Sage? That's what you get.
Every day, every podcast, it becomes more and more clear that there is no production meeting. We just see what happens. Ira, your podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, where we've had a wave of good reviews. Feel free to review the podcast there. And at Google Play, other platforms, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course right at JoeBucksFan.com, where thousands listen. The podcast continues to thrive. And Ira, I got to ask you, if you went out to Palm Coast with your good buddy Cosmo and your wife, did Cosmo have any kind of accident in that beautiful 2020 Ford Escape cherry red, best vehicle I've seen in a long time? Is everything okay in the car?
You know, it's funny you mentioned the beautiful cherry red Ford Escape, because we had a debate going in, which car should we take? We didn't want to mess up, the beautiful new Escape. But she put a blanket down, a towel on her lap, and you know, he was a little restless on the way up. Now, of course, coming home in the middle of the night, pitch dark, he had no choice but to go to sleep. We stopped halfway up, gave him a pee break. We get back in the car. I drive about 10 minutes. My wife says, now I got to go pee. Oh, Jesus, Lee, you can't win. You can't win. I wasn't going to walk her through the grass on the side of the road. So I had to go to a convenience store, and the guy didn't want to let her use the bathroom, so I ended up buying a bag of chips. I don't like spending money when I don't have to, but it was, you know, to take a pee break, it's worth $1.19. That's what I think.
Well, in Germany, actually, you're going to use a public restroom at extra cost.
You know, you use those public restrooms at your own risk, Lee. You know that.
Oh,
you absolutely
yeah.
know that. Oh, boy.
Well, that was before coronavirus as well. Ira, Bill Curry Ford, we have switched to the new month. I don't even know what the new offers are, but the ones in May, they have expired. But you can still get phenomenal deals on used vehicles and new vehicles. Get to BillCurryFord.com. The new offers for this month are going to be rolling out any second as we speak. And very excited, Sean Sullivan, I just talked to him the other day. We're planning some things. He's the general manager. He is available and ready to give every listener his full attention and assistance in buying a vehicle. You got questions. And, of course, he's going to give you the Ira Kaufman Joe Bucks Fan discount, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, you also will be having your schedule very soon from Big Storm Beer to not only drink the beer, of course, at all times, any day you want to, but your schedule to watch games with Bucks fans at the Odessa Tap Room, right off State Road 54 on Success Drive, or at their flagship location, 49th Street in Clearwater, south of Almerton. The Sage is going back on the road to mingle with Bucks fans. Very excited to roll out the schedule. BigStormBrewery.com to check out all of their beers, and the best places have them. They are fantastic. Ira, let me get this right to you as we sit with training camp next month. I haven't heard anybody cancel anything, so I'm very excited. Vita Vea. Now, you wrote about him. You got a thing going on. You're excited about Vea. You called him the next Gerald McCoy as far as a young player. I was surprised people didn't freak out when you called him that. But you really are very high on Vea. I know you've been talking around, sniffing around, watching more tape. What do you want to say?
I'm going to say this. I don't think he's ever going to be a player whose true value and full value show up on the stat sheet. He's not going to be one of those guys. Now, the Ravens had a guy for a long time named Haladi Nagata, 320, man beast in the middle. You couldn't run on the Ravens. But when you looked at the end of the year, the guy had like 40 tackles, in 16 games. Nothing sensational. Had four sacks. But the Ravens, had the number four defense in the league, and he was a big part of it. And Vea has a lot of those qualities, and I think guys that come in Vea's wake are going to be compared to Vea. And I think it's already happening because I alluded to one of the Cardinal draft picks, and Steve Keim was saying I saw a lot of Vita Vea in him. That's a hell of a compliment, Lee, for a guy that's only played two seasons. He ties up guys. He's disruptive. He may not be getting a sack, but I'm not saying he's responsible for 19 and a half sacks by Shaq Barrett, but he's a contributor, Lee, and I think if he's missing, the whole thing, I think, kind of falls apart. And also, I want to make the point, Lee, that he's the only young guy up there. I mean, Golston's not young. He's not a huge factor anyway. Certainly, we know about Pierre Paul. We know about Sue, their age. Nassib's gone. Lee, in terms of building around a front, and they didn't draft anybody with a premium pick up front like you and I thought they might, going forward, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, Sue's not going to be a buck. JPP's probably not going to be a buck. He's going to be the guy the Bucks are building around, and I just think the more I watch the film, Lee, he's a heck of a player, Lee.
Well, I'm a big Vea fan, and I make no bones about it, and I know the people that were bellyaching about this guy from San Diego.
Yep.
Florida. Yeah, Derwin James. They've kind of piped down a little bit.
No. James is a very good player, Lee. James is a very good player.
He was hurt most of the last year. I mean, you could be the next Deion Sanders or the Larry Wilsons of safeties, but if you can't get on the field, you got to be on the field. The immortal words of Bill Parcells, your best ability is availability. And I have nothing at all against Derwin James, but I know Bucks fans went nuts and was like, Bucks were what, one of the other 15 teams that passed on him? This guy was the greatest thing since sliced bread. He would have been drafted sooner than he was, so let's calm down. No, I was always a big Vea fan. I still am a big Vea fan. And, yeah, 3-4 years from now, they're going to rebuild that defense because everybody else in the front line is going to be gone, probably Lavonnie David as well. So he will be the anchor, for lack of a better word, on that defense to build around.
It'll be him and Devin White, Steve, in 3 years in terms of the front seven.
Just wanted to give you your chance to profess your love for Vita Vea and explain yourself. I'm still sort of in show me a little more mode for Vea.
Right.
Primarily because of where he was drafted and the fact that he just didn't play close to as many snaps, more than 100 fewer snaps than Sue last year. So I just want to see a little bit more, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if we get another or a breakthrough kind of year from Vea this year.
He might have some stamina issues as the season progresses. He might. Something to keep an eye on.
What I would have paid to see, and I swear I would have, but Roger Goodell and the Don't Hit Too Hard League, here we are. I would pay to see Vita Vea and Tristan Wirfs, who's a weightlifting powerhouse. I would pay to see those guys in the Oklahoma drill.
Nice.
I would pay to see that, but we never will. Thank you, Ron.
Excellent point, Lee. And I'll be the first to admit it. I was one of these people, pulled calf muscle, Steve, right off the freaking bat. I didn't think he hadn't made a tackle for the Tampa Bay Bucks. And a pulled calf muscle, the heat of Tampa, August, the guys, 340. It goes through your mind, Steve. Is this going to be a problem? Is this the first of many leg type of injuries? But Lee shook it off. He made 16 starts. So, you know, what can you say last year?
I know what you're talking about. His rookie year, what was it, the second padded practice? First or second padded practice, he blows out his leg. And, you know, had no training camp, no preseason. His first game was that debacle up in Chicago, if I recall correctly.
I think that's right.
And he, you know, had an okay rookie year for not having a training camp, not having a preseason, and you know, starting three weeks into the season. That wasn't too bad of a rookie season. And yeah, he sure hit his stride last year.
All right, Sage, I wanted to throw this at you. And I was going to wait till later, but since you brought up you were talking defensive line in the future, I wanted to bring up Shaq Barrett. And I wrote about this, I think it gets overlooked a lot, and I want your opinion on sort of how you would approach this if you were the Sage general manager. Now, Shaq hasn't signed his franchise tag. And players, whether they've signed it or they haven't signed it, can renegotiate a contract, essentially get a long-term deal or a multi-year deal, and have that contract torn up, and that's their new contract. Shaq hasn't signed yet. The Bucs don't appear to be negotiating with him that I've heard anything. However, you know, fans talk about how the Bucs don't have cap room to go after a Logan Ryan if they wanted to, or it might be a little tight if they wanted to pay Devontae Freeman $3.5 million or Clay Matthews. Or, you know, teams like to have a little bit in reserve just in case somebody goes down. Like, you know, look back to Gazdar Chehrilis coming off the street in August about 4 years ago or so. So, Sage, my point is this. If there was a guy you really wanted to have, would you be willing to go to Shaq and say, look, we'll pay you $10 million this year, we'll give you $21 million next year, but let's do this, we'll guarantee it. We need that cap room to sign this guy this year, we're all in, so let's get something done, Shaq. You think the Bucks would ever consider something like that?
Well, Steve, you're talking about only a two-year commitment. I don't think that's a terrible idea to give him some immediate cap relief. But I can't blame Buck management at this point for proceeding with caution. Not skepticism, but caution. Look, the fact remains he doesn't have a body of work. He's got a hellacious 2019. That's what he's got. He was a fairly effective situational player for the Broncos who had no problem letting him test free agency and who drafted Bradley Chubb because they wanted an edge rusher when they had Shaq Barrett on the roster. So those are the facts. And Lee, I think you'd agree with me. I'm certainly not in a position to give Shaq Barrett a four-year deal right now. I can't do it. Let him prove himself. Now I do the show with Derek Brooks on the Identity, Tampa 2. I asked Brooks directly, do you think Shaq Barrett could be a one-year wonder? Derek Brooks, who's seen a few decent football players in his day and knows how to judge talent, doesn't think Barrett falls into that category, doesn't expect 19.5 sacks, but says Barrett has the kind of skills and talent and moves and determination that he's going to be very productive for the Bucs this fall. Lee, he's going to get his money if he plays well. He's going to get his money. He's going to get paid. And he might get a long-term extension because guys like Shaq Barrett, they don't show up very often. So, Lee, I'm not going to knock the Bucs for being cautious.
Oh, neither am I, but I'm not sweating this whole thing. And Shaq's on record more than a couple times. I'm going to play. I'm going to play. I don't want to be tagged, but I'm going to play. If it comes down to that, I'm going to play. So I'm not sweating it. But, yeah, I basically wrote the same thing months ago, and, man, did I catch Alvin Raiders. Oh, he didn't get 19 sacks again? You know this how. And the only thing that spooks me about Shaq, and I wrote this morning. Now, many times already, I wrote the key to the offense. There's one key to the offense, and the offense should do well. There's one key. Keep Tom Brady upright. That's the key. With defense, keep JPP healthy. We saw what happened when JPP was not on there and teams decided to take out Shaq. He was a non-factor when they went after him. Two and three people every play. And even Shaq admitted, he goes, I never saw anything like this. He has three guys on top of him.
Yeah, I think there were two games when he was an absolute non-factor. I think you're
exactly.
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Teams took him out, starting with Carolina. I believe Carolina or New Orleans. They focused. You know, we take him out, we'll be fine. And that's exactly what happened. And along comes JPP. You know, he was activated. And JPP comes on the field, all of a sudden, different story. They couldn't focus solely on Shaq. And then Shaq resumed his fact-making way.
Yes.
So the key with the defense, much like the offense, is Brady keeping Brady on his 2 feet. The key with the defense, and I guess you could say the Bucs in general, they need to keep JPP fresh. And if he runs out of gas toward the end of the year and his team's, you know, all saying, oh, we're going to be playing in January, we're playing in January. Well, if JPP has no gas in the tank in January, it's likely teams are going to go after Shaq again.
Good observation, Lee. Now, Steve, on that show that I did with Brooks, I think we were talking about Pete Prisco's top 100, of which he had, I think he had $6, if you count Brady, which is not bad representation given the Bucks' scoreboard over the last 12 years. But, Steve, I asked Brooks directly, and I said, Derek, I've said this on the podcast, I've written it in the column, and I wanted to run it past him, and I said, Shaq Barrett may have turned in the greatest opening month by a defensive player in the 100-year history of the National Football League. No, I didn't see the guy in 1927 that was playing with a leather helmet. I did not. I did not. But you know what? Brooks did not disagree. Brooks did not disagree. I think he had 9 sacks. He might have had 3 forced fumbles. It's hard to do better than that. And to be fair, that came without JPP. Now, it also came, Steve, nobody knowing who Shaq Barrett was. So to Lee's point, once you have a month like that, now teams make an adjustment. And without JPP there to readjust, he had 2 non-productive weeks.
Sure. For me, the 2 weeks, it's 2 weeks. I mean, a guy can't be productive. No pass rusher is productive every week. But it is something to note. One thing that sticks with me, Ira, is last year Shaq didn't have a very good offseason, and he actually played in the 4th preseason game. Now think about that. A $4 million veteran free agent, you bring him in.
Wow.
There he is in the 4th preseason game, and Shaq has admitted, you know, I just wasn't really doing too well. And so it makes you wonder, especially in this offseason without – you know, this different kind of wacky offseason. Also, when I think of Shaq, I'll go into the history books here, Ira. I won't go back as far to the leather helmet guy and you used to date his sister, whoever that was. But, Ira, I think about Styles White when he came to the Bucks as Greg White out of the Arena League.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in he comes in 2007, and he lights the world on fire. 7 forced fumbles. I think he had 8.5 sacks in limited playing time. Set the world on fire, and then became the Greg Styles White that we used to know. So, you know, these things do happen. Shaq just took it to such an extreme level.
You know, one thing about Styles White, and all 3 of us dealt with him in the locker room, funny guy, intelligent, great quote, but I don't want to speak for all 3 of us. You guys weigh in, tell me, but I never thought he took it that seriously. He didn't come off the professionalism. You know, it was a little lacking to me. He was, he wanted to do well, but I wasn't sure he was willing to put the work in. And Shaq Barrett doesn't strike me like that. Lee, you agree with me?
I think Shaq will put in the work. I never got any impression that he won't or has. With Styles White, no, he'll never be confused like James, who works all like a maniac. No, that wasn't Styles White. And Styles White is the source, the launching pad, for lack of a better term, of my favorite Raheem quote of all time, Raheem Morris. I'll tolerate you until I can replace you.
And I swear he got that from Mike Tomlin.
He got that from Tomlin, okay.
He got it from Tomlin. You know, Steve, we remember Styles White fondly, very happy-go-lucky. Steve, never in a bad mood, never sour. Always
even a Joe Buck fan.
And always accommodating. But, you know, we're not surprised he did not have a long and distinguished career. And I think Shaq Barrett's a little bit more of a serious customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I fully expect Shaq to have a good year. It's just a question of how good, right? 12
right.
sacks. If he has 12 sacks, it's a phenomenal year. And he'll get paid big time, but that isn't what he had last year. So it's just kind of interesting, Ira. You know, one thing that we keep hearing from all these experts. At least I do. Iron, all I do is sit around and listen to football and all that kind of stuff, everything football all day. We keep hearing the same kind of quote with guys saying, experts saying, we're going to find out what teams have guys that really love football. And what they're trying to say is, with no supervision on these guys, because they're training remotely, and a lot of fans may not realize, but when the players are there for 6 weeks of OTAs on and off like they would have been now, I mean, they're coming in, they're weighing in, working with a nutritionist. The team is feeding them 2-3 meals a day when they are there. And, you know, their diets are monitored, and, you know, it's a lot harder to slack on your diet when you know in 2 days I'm getting weighed in and the nutritionist is going to be talking to me. And their hydration is measured, all this stuff. So, you know what? These experts are trying to say teams are going to know if they really have enough guys who care enough to be ready to play. And I don't know where the Bucks fall there. Like, I think they have a good group, but I don't know compared to the other teams. I'm not sure. What do you think?
I'm with you all the way on that, Steve. That theory may be valid, and it comes down to one word, Mr. DeKemper: professionalism. Pride, that's two words, but professionalism. Steve aptly described the controlled environment that players are usually under, starting with training camp, maybe even OTA sessions, even though they're voluntary supposedly, but you can't help but be disciplined almost. And now you're on your own. It's up to you. And Lee, I'm kind of with Steve. You know, Jason Light likes to talk about, we have a great locker room. I think that's about to be tested. And really, I don't think the three of us can absolutely say with any certainty that the Bucks, you know, lead the league in professionalism. I'm not ready to go there.
Ian Rappaport's podcast, some trainer by the name of Tony Villani, I don't know him, but apparently he trains a bunch of NFL guys, and he said he fully expects whenever the NFL opens up training camps, only is the direct quote, only 20% of NFL players truly dedicate themselves in the offseason.
And Steve, it could lead to more injuries, especially early in the season. It could.
Yeah, it's hard to say, Ira. It's hard to say. It's just I was wondering where you thought the Bucks fell. And like you said, you're not sure. You're, you know, kind of lukewarm as far as is this team have enough professionalism to be ahead of other teams when it comes to this. But there's two elements here I wanted to ask you, even go even deeper, guys. Back in 2011 in the lockout, you got Josh Freeman leading workouts at USF and down at IMG in Bradenton, and the guys are out there completely on their own, and we're hearing of workouts of LeGarrette Blount in South Tampa and all this other stuff going on. And the Bucks managed in that lockout season to open 4-2, beat the Falcons. And then they fell apart, I think, with what had nothing to do with the lack of an off season. It was more other factors and discipline and everything else, but maybe that ties together. I don't know. But I think that's kind of interesting when you look at it, because they seem to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah. I mean, I look at that, and I look at the first 6 weeks, and we had no reason, none of us, to think, and Buck Nation, heck, 2010 was a stepping stone to better days, and here comes the playoffs, and you start 4-2, and Lee, you know, we've talked about it many times, this franchise is not known for 4-2 starts, certainly to put it mildly, you know, since Chucky left. You're 4-2, you're coming off 10-6, you narrowly got beat out by a wild card berth, and Freeman was healthy, and I don't remember health being a major issue after the 4-2 start. But it certainly fell apart, to put it, that's an understatement, when you lose your final 10 games and prompts a coaching change. And I'm kind of with Steve on this one, where I think the impromptu workouts helped in regards to the start. Lee, the Bucks got out of the gate in very good fashion, and perhaps other teams were a little slower because of how they handled the lockout. But it didn't last, Lee, as any Buck fan will tell you. It did not last. And the ultimate value of these off-season workouts, even though you got a guy like Tom Brady who might be leading them, I don't know about the long-term value of it, but I'd rather have him out there than not. It can't hurt.
Something happened on that trip to London. You know, the Bucks beat the Saints. Quincy Black, if I remember correctly, got a key interception in the end zone very late in the game to seal the win, and the Bucks headed off to London. Something happened over in London. Dan Lucas, WFLA, we always talk about it. It's kind of hush-hush. I can't remember what it was, but Talib had an incident with Raheem in the lobby, whatever hotel they were at, and there was other things that happened. I think a couple cheerleaders got caught with some players and got fired. I'll have to ask Dan Lucas. Kellen Winslow, I heard something about how he couldn't even sit in a chair. His back was so messed up, which in retrospect is probably a good thing, hearing what he did on airplanes for solo entertainment.
Sage, I got to say this, and I think the Tom Brady lovers might not like this, but it needs your sage wisdom in these challenging times with no offseason program for the players. Does Tom Brady's celebrity make it harder to work out with his teammates? This isn't Jameis Winston who can call up the guys and say, let's go over to USF or Skyway Park or any other public park and not attract a lunatic, crazy crowd and the paparazzi and TV cameras and word gets out and all that. Does it make it more difficult because Brady is the guy? And Berkeley Prep, I'll throw it out to you here. Berkeley Prep, where he was before, they began their summer camp today, where kids are there early in the morning. So that venue is out at this point.
It makes it more difficult, Steve, but not impossible. Somebody, you know, in my estimation, that Berkeley Prep thing that was infiltrated, I got to think somebody from Berkeley Prep spilled the beans. I mean, Tom Brady ain't telling anybody in the media. He doesn't want a swarm over there. He doesn't want cameras. Berkeley Prep didn't mind the publicity, and they got it. But there's places to go in this beautiful land we call the Bay Area. Gentlemen, I think they can go in Brady's backyard if they want, with the off-duty cops shielding the kayakers. Do it. Yeah, I understand what Steve means about celebrity. It makes it harder. It makes it harder, you know, but I remember when John Gruden used to work out the Tim Tebow's of the world, you know, for ESPN when he had that quarterback camp, and I remember getting a call from one of Gruden's people tipping me off, so I went out to Carrollwood Day, but there was no mob scene. You could, and you know, and Gruden was a big celebrity at the time. He was retired and working in the booth. And there ain't nobody, you know, I'm not sure Brady's more of a celebrity than Tim Tebow, guys, in Florida. I mean, I think that's a tough argument. And this was years ago.
Right.
When Tebow Mania was at its height, the ESPN camera crews were there. It was very professional. And then Tebow gave us a couple of minutes afterwards, but it can be done, Steve. I think it's going to be done, over the next month or two. But yeah, there's a celebrity tinge to this.
Moderately interesting that we haven't heard anything from various sources and from, including from the players and coaches that we talked to on Zoom, haven't heard anything about the defensive players getting together. Nothing.
Hey, Steve, one more thing about the Brady thing. We've been told on some good authority that was not the first time they were at Berkeley Prep. So
I would be surprised if that was the case. I'd be surprised if they didn't practice a few times before that.
Yeah. You can do it without fanfare if you're careful, Steve, if you're careful.
You know, Jesuit, I think, just from the top of my head, I think that's fairly private, you know, back off the street. It's not near any street from what I can think of. It's fairly private. I know Lakewood, for, you know, Lewis Murphy's old school, and Lewis Murphy still lives in St. Pete. I know that place is secluded as far as, you know, if you get on the field, you're outside the gates. You can't see anything on the field. So I'm confident there are a bunch of places they could have some privacy and they won't have to worry about paparazzi, much less people walking up off the street in the neighborhood watching them.
By the way, Steve, just a note, just a 10-second note. Congratulations, Mr. Cameron Brate, on your engagement. Best of luck. You're a good man. I'm expecting a big year out of Brate. We know the bride-to-be. And we wish him the best of luck.
I thought you were going to say you were expecting an invitation and a good buffet. You know, guys making $1 million.
I think I can get Tropic Pressure, you know, can get Big Storm Beer to finance the whole wedding. So let's go do it.
Ira, BillCurry4.com. That's where everybody's got to shop. If you're car shopping, truck shopping, used vehicle shopping, they got the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, BillCurryFord.com. Email Sean Sullivan, the GM, if you got a question. It's on their website. And, of course, they even have their own insurance company. I'm a customer. Curry Cares. Saved me a bunch of money on my car insurance. BillCurryFord.com will do everything they can in every possible way for you.
Hey, guys, speaking of Bill Curry Ford, Steve, I am due for an oil change. I have hit the 3,000-mile mark or approaching it thereof in my cherry red 2020 Ford Escape. So I'm thinking, you know, I mosey in for an oil change, and the three of us get together with Sean Sullivan one day in the next couple of weeks in the showroom. And if Lee wants to wear a mask, let him wear a mask. I understand. They've renovated the showroom. I'm eager to see it. I think it's going to be spectacular. And Big Storm was a big part of that. So, Steve, put it on your docket. I think we should do a nice podcast, the three of us together, the four of us together.
All right, Sage, question for you. You think Tristan Wirfs is going to be trained at all? Given the short off season, is he going to be take any snaps in their cross training and in the teaching that comes his way at left tackle? Or are the Bucks not going to open that can of worms until next year?
Steve, I have warned you several times on this podcast, and I will continue to do it as long as you continue to use the phrase cross train. I don't want to hear it, Isbitz. No Buck fan wants to hear it. I'm tired about the safety slash cornerback. I don't want to hear it. I'm tired of the DND tackle conundrum, the guard center. Pick a freaking position and work the hell out of the guy and get him to be the best he can be. The answer to your question is absolutely not. He will not be trained at left tackle. He's got to have his hands full at right tackle, and he's going to need every darn snap of training camp, and if there's any OTAs there, and preseason on the right side to get used to what it's like playing the position at the next level. And Lee, we got plenty of time to make decisions about Donovan Smith going forward in 2021 with his contract and a whole nother offseason to address that. I don't want to do another Ali Marpet over here and jerk this guy all over the place. Hey, I'm still the only guy in town that thinks if Marpet was still at right guard, I think he could be perhaps being considered, as a Pro Bowler. But it hasn't happened at center, and it hasn't happened at left guard. I never understood this thing. We want him next to Donovan Smith. It still hasn't been explained to me. He's not going to say anything about it.
Won't talk to you about that?
And, you know, Christian Wirfs is the right tackle for the 2020 Bucks. He's going to be the right tackle from the first day of training camp and the first preseason game. And if he doesn't get hurt, he's supposed to play 16 games at right tackle. And Steve, put that in your pipe and smoke it. There ain't going to be no fooling around with Tristan Wirfs.
Lee, do you think the Buccaneers are going to invest time in 2020 training and getting Tristan Wirfs up to speed at left tackle?
No, not 2020.
So what do you got?
Maybe not even 2021.
Steve, you are stunned. You are not getting support from DeKemper. You are stunned.
It's not support. I asked him a question. What he thought?
After the Tom Brady years, which is 2 years, let's be honest. After the Tom Brady years, you know, everybody's talking about the 2 year window. After this 2 year window is over, then perhaps. What I think is going to happen is, unless he really, really, really stinks at right tackle, we don't know that yet. I mean, some very learned football people, when he was coming out of Iowa, they said, this guy's going to be good, but they didn't know if he could handle a speed rush because he never handled a speed rush in college. So it's still an unknown. And like Bill Polian said, and others have parodied what Bill Polian said, if he can't play right tackle, no big deal. You move him to right guard, he'll be there the next 10 years. So I don't think they're going to monkey. The only way he's monkeyed with, I think, if he is so bad at right tackle that next year, not this year. They're going to get him the whole stinking year because they have to. They'll put Gronkowski next to him and have him block to help him out next year if he's bad at right tackle. Then they may look at a different position for him, specifically guard. No, not this year, no. And if he's any, if he's average, they won't mess with him next year either.
Steve, listen to the wise man.
Sage.
Mr. DeKemper, listen to the wise man. Steve, I read the scouting reports on Wirfs. I read them.
It's not about the scouting reports. Ira, come on now. I need some sensibility here. Here, let's just put a hypothetical out there. Week 6, Donovan Smith pulls a calf muscle. He's going to be out 5 weeks. Are the Bucks
okay,
going to be...
Okay, I wasn't expecting that. Okay, that's a different animal.
Are the Bucks going to be caught with their pants down and the whole nation is saying, well, they can move Wirfs over to left tackle and let Joe Haig play right tackle. And you're telling me, Ira, the Bucks are going to say, yeah, well, we didn't train him over there, so we're using Josh Wells at left tackle to protect Tom Brady.
I think you'd see Haig at left tackle before you'd see Wirfs. How do you like that? Now, if you let me finish my sentence, Mr. Isbitz, before cutting me off, like the old Mike Wallace over there on 60 Minutes. What I was about to say was, out of the big four tackle prospects of the 2020 draft, Wirfs was maybe number 3 in terms of versatility to play both sides of the tackle. I think Andrew Thomas was ahead of him and Becton was ahead of him in that regard. I've also, as Lee pointed out, he's an unknown against speed rushers. The ones that he did face, I don't know if he struggled, but he did not excel. And you're in a hurry to put him on the left side of, Brady's blind side, Stephen. So he's a road grader. Let him do his job. I think he's going to be a very good right tackle. And you're in a hurry to bump Donovan Smith and move him over.
I'm in no hurry whatsoever, Ira. I just wanted to see if you thought they were going to cross-train the guy. I know you hate that word. I know you hate it as a verb, as a noun, or whatever it might be. But
he won't even wear cross-training shoes.
I'm gonna put a little wager, Ira, that they spend some time with Wirfs at left tackle, not only because as an emergency situation, not only to get a look at him, but to light a fire under Donovan Smith.
All right, now hold on. Lee, now you're the witness. And our thousands of podcast listeners are witnesses.
Lee, give me a witness to something you can't see.
Steve, in the sad event that Donovan Smith goes out in week 5, and let's say it's a 2-week injury, we are betting a Reuben at Big Storm, and you know how much I love those Reubens. And Lee, you're listening to this. Donovan Smith sidelined for 2 weeks. I got Joe Haig, you got Wirfs, who starts the following week at left tackle for the Bucks. I got Haig, you got Wirfs. Do you accept that, Mr. Isbitz?
I accept that, Ira. That's fine.
Okay. There you go. Now I'm not rooting for an injury, but I got some insurance. There you go.
All you got is a sandwich, Ira. All right. Lee, you got anything to throw at Ira? Otherwise, we are out of here, and episode 2 of this week will be coming up bigger, badder, and stronger on the Ira Kaufman podcast.
Ryan Jensen was on this podcast, and you know, they asked him, I said, you got a lot of pressure on you now that Brady's here and people are talking Super Bowl? And he said, no. He goes, no pressure. He goes, excitement, but no pressure. He claims Brady will make the offensive line look better, and he also said, you know what? People go after us. Whether we do our job or not, we're always at fault for everything. So we're used to that. We get it. But he said that Brady will make them look better because he knows when the ball's coming out and Brady knows where he's going with it. Brady knows how to read the play. I don't think it was so much a knock at Jameis. It was more of like, Brady will make us better.
There's a lot of validity to that in terms of going through his progressions quickly. He doesn't want to take a hit. Not that he ever wanted to, but he ain't 27, and he didn't want to take one at 27. He certainly doesn't want to take one at 43. He does not like getting hit. Well, quarterback does, so we shall see. Steve, 2 things about the offensive line. 1, listening to Marpet last week, Jensen and the interviews that he's doing, I think they got a little chip on their shoulder. I don't mind it, but I think they feel that people like me and others have been chipping away over the years about this offensive line, ripping them for not opening up holes, 47 sacks last year. Maybe they think they're unfairly maligned. I don't think it's been unfair, Steve. And my other point is, you know, the guy that never comes up, Alex Kappa. He never comes up, Steve. And I got to say, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I thought he'd be a more natural right tackle, and who knows, you know, about the future. And if Worf gets shifted to right guard, maybe they try Kappa at right tackle.
Are you still trying to get Kappa to be a tackle? Lee, what's going on over here?
I want him cross-trained, baby. Cross-trained. But you know what? Here's my point about Kappa. The fact we're not talking about him, and it was his first year as a starter, that means he was pretty good last year. So I got no problems with him right now. No problem.
I don't know if Kappa was, in my eyes, I don't know if he was quote-unquote pretty good, but he was good enough to, like you said, I don't think he was a sieve. He's a tough SOB. I mean, playing with that broken arm, maybe I'm giving him a lot more slack than I should, because that's impressive. I'm sorry. That is impressive. But, you know, I don't know if he's a Pro Bowler or not, but
right.
He's a tough SOB, and I think that's what you want in an offensive lineman. Just some tough, ornery dude. And I don't know how much ornery he is, but you play through a broken arm, you got my respect, pal.
You don't normally see guards that tall, Steve. It's rare. He carried it pretty well last year.
Let's put it this way, Ira. I think your dream of him playing right tackle is virtually nil, because they just drafted a right tackle in the first round.
Well, I'm just saying, you mentioned the fact that Wirfs could be shifted to right guard if things don't work out at tackle.
All right, Ira, look, I will disagree with you again, and I will say I don't think the line has a chip on its shoulder at all. I wish they did, but I don't think they do. I don't think they played like it in the last couple of years, and I just don't think that's the mentality of this group. I'm not saying they're all soft, but I don't think that's what this group is all about. And, you know, we even hear from Wirfs. We hear the knock on Wirfs is that he's Mr. Super Nice Guy, and we'll see what kind of influence can rub off. Remember, it was Jason Light who brought in J.R. Sweezy in here to quote-unquote rub off on the other offensive linemen. And then in comes Jensen. He's got to rub off. You know, you got to ask yourself, why does anybody need to rub off on some of these guys?
You don't forget a thing, Isbeth. You do not forget. What a mind you got.
And you know why? Remember why they drafted Kappa, right? We had Mike Mayock on TV saying, this is the nastiest guy I've ever seen. Well, so you know what? I think the culture of that O-line isn't that nasty. And hopefully it changes. Hopefully it kicks up. But Ira, go cross train yourself and get some sleep.
You know what my cross training is? Switching between tropic pressure and the lime shandy over there. That's my cross training.